So identity. Now you grew up thinking, what did you think growing up as knowing that, when did you realize you were first a, not a boy?
Oh, right away. Right away.
When did you notice the difference between being a boy and a...
That's kind of hard to say, because my family, it's been kind of a female family, and all women, basically, but my father, of course, who wasn't much present in the house. So it was my mom, her sister, her mother, me, my other sister, and then after a while, my other sister.
Right. It's interesting because my mother came from, had 5-6 sisters.
Uh-huh.
And so when the boys came along as the children,
mm-hmm.
they were just worshipped because they... And my sister felt left out because she said... And the first one was a girl, and then the last one was a girl. So my sister, especially when I left home, and mm-hmm. I'm 4 years older than my sister, people would come, and they wouldn't say hello to my sister.
Oh.
They'd say, have you heard from your brother?
Oh, because you're the man, the precious
stuff
in the family.
And then on top of that, my first wife
mm-hmm.
came from a family of 4 sisters, no boys. And my second wife came from a family of 4 mm-hmm. 3
sisters,
and one boy who was gay. And I realized that relationships, women who don't have a male brother,
mm-hmm.
have interesting identity issues.
Really?
Well, because they don't have that kind of testosterone.
All right. Huh.
At least that was an observation.
It's possible. I haven't thought about it.
I thought about it a lot. I know that one
of my issues like that is that I have too much estrogen uh-huh. which is the opposite, of course.
Right. Yeah. You're a woman, and you became a woman at an early age. You were telling me.
I developed. Yeah, I was 11.
11.
Early. Yes. Yes.
And the girls around you were still in diapers, basically.
Yes, I had different kind of diapers. Then. Yeah, I would show off though about that.
your breast?
Not much about the breast, but about having bleeding, having this thing that only I had.
Oh, at 11.
Friends. Oh yes.
Uh-huh.
And they wouldn't believe me, and I would say, "Well, let's go to the bathroom and I'll show you." But they were, "No, that's impossible, because I was a kid. I mean, I was told that I was a kid. I was playing like a kid and thinking like a kid. And I was a kid, period."
You still are.
I am, yeah. With wrinkles, but it's okay.
Yeah, that just makes you more old. Celebrate. You celebrate
more
your
old.
Wrinkles. No,
but
you
that's
celebrate.
Okay. I mean, I'm not afraid of that.
But going back to 11 years old, since we're talking about identity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my girlfriends of my age, they were far away from bleeding.
Right.
And so I would show off, truly. I would say, "Oh, yes, you know, I have my period. And oh, sorry, I have to go to the bathroom. You know, I have to change my pad." Like, and they're like, "What? What are you doing? What are you talking about? You're making it up." Because normally, they would, after a couple of years, if not more, a girlfriend of mine didn't have her first period until she was 15. So, pretty old. So, that was really funny. In that moment, I felt very good about myself, because I was special somehow, you know? And it's like I was a grown-up. Even if I wasn't at all, 11-year-old, come on.
Right,
what
right.
What kind of grown-up? You can be a grown-up in another culture, for sure, but
right.
In the Western culture, at 11, you're not a grown-up
right.
at all.
But you also were developing breasts at the same time.
Oh, yes, indeed. Indeed. And that would embarrass me a lot. Embarrassing or embarrass me?
Same, it doesn't matter.
Okay, that word. The I word.
Right. For identity.
Oh, that's I embarrass with the E, exactly.
Right.
Sorry about that. Yes, because we were at school. I was in sixth grade, the first middle school.
In where?
In Italy, in Venice. And we had gymnastic hours that we had to do, I guess, twice a week, and that was mandatory. You had to do 1 hour. It was part of the school program. All my girlfriends were all just, you know, taking their clothes off and putting on a t-shirt to go running or jumping or whatever, and I couldn't run and jump any longer without a bra because it was hurting. And so I remember everybody, you know, like, yeah, very freely taking them, and me having this, like, how do you say that in English?
Say it in Italian.
A corazza.
Corazza.
Corazza is what a warrior would wear.
A corset.
Corset. Okay, yes. I was feeling like that I was doing something like that. And I hated the sensation of having this thing around me, and then I just couldn't do like everybody else. And so, yeah, that I didn't like. And then I didn't like the attention from the grown-ups. I didn't.
What was going through your mind?
I didn't get it. I couldn't get it. I was too young, I was too little in my mind, in my experience, in my life. I was playing with dolls. They had more teeth than me, probably, but soon after that I got more teeth of my dolls, of course. And I just didn't get it. I didn't understand why a man would look at me or without looking into my eyes and, you know, getting, and I just couldn't understand what was going on and what was wrong with me, of course, because I was the small one, the little one, and I didn't doubt the grown-ups' behavior. I was doubting myself, what's wrong with me, what are these people treating me this way, what happens, why do they do that? And I couldn't understand how an older man could be looking like that to a girl, like a kid, as I said before. I couldn't understand that.
How did that affect you, your own identity, as you, because you obviously made an impression on you?
Oh yes, of course it did.
How did it define you?
I would try to hide. I would try to hide my body. Also because besides, I'm tall. I'm not super tall, but I'm not short at all. And so I'm pretty visible no matter what. And I would try to wear very large clothes, which was also good because the fashion in that moment was like that, and so it helped me in that, yeah, in that moment. And I don't know if I was scared or if I was more wondering, like, what happens? What's wrong with these people? What's wrong with me, especially? Of course, I liked boys. I mean, my first boyfriend, I had it when I was 4.
Only 4.
Only 4. I went to, you would say maybe kindergarten, I guess, yes, at the nuns. I had this boyfriend that I was crazily in love with, of course. I'm always crazily in love with everybody, so especially with a boyfriend. And then I would, if I think about it, it's so silly, but I would make this game with him that we were lost in a desert island. And so I had to save him, he had to save me, and we would kiss eventually. And of course the nuns didn't like that. And we were running from the nuns, like trying to hide somewhere and finally kiss.
That's part of the game.
Of course, that was.
But did you have any, at 4 years old, what is a kiss anyway?
I don't know what it was about, I felt very romantic. I remember my heart was beating fast. I remember that. For him, I remember that sensation very clearly, very well. And I always wanted to be admired by the boys, because I liked boys. Even when I was 7, 8, I loved their attention. I loved when they would say something nice to me, and I was just very romantic. But then when I found myself in the mirror having this gigantic but strong breast, especially at my age, at that age, and I saw the older men, the grown-ups, putting all those eyes on me, that really bothered me. And I just, as I said, I didn't get it. I thought there was something twisted about that, or something crazy, something wrong somehow. So yes, I try to hide my body and its shape, which is I recognize my body as a very feminine shape, undoubtedly so, because I have a strong breast, strong hips, a small waist, so it's not small but smaller than the rest. So, you know, if I wear something like this, you totally can see the shape. So imagine like this when I was 12. Now I understand that a man can be attractive. Also, of course, how would they know that I was 12? Because I looked 20. I'll take you. I have a picture here when I was 12. I'll show you sometime.
Oh, I'd love to.
You, yeah, because if you see it, you can. You would never guess that I'm 12. Never. If I see it now, I say, okay, now maybe I get it, although I feel still mad at those people somehow. Like the principal in the school, the music teacher, and, you know, I remember some characters like those being very interested. And they never did anything ugly on me, fortunately, but I felt that interest. And it's funny, because then seeing now how my body was attracting men, I never thought I was an attractive woman at all, ever. I always saw myself as, you know, like, well, I say ugly, I can say that, because it's how I feel. And so I always was wishing to feel beautiful. I guess that phase of my life where my breasts were, you know, the focus of attention for people didn't put me in that spot of feeling pretty. It just felt, you know, like a dish. Yeah.
That's interesting, because I think, since we're talking about identity, and the name of this conversation and song is identity, I wonder how many other women, models and people who are worshipped, think themselves as beautiful. I remember hearing one of the world famous beauties who said she didn't think she was beautiful, but she had beautiful hair.
Yes.
Even though she was on the cover of all the magazines,
yes,
and she was getting all this worshiping and money and success, and
yes, I know, I understand that. I'm also sometimes, I don't understand how somebody can't see their own talent, or whatever it is. It's beauty, or being great cook, or painters, or excellent parents, whatever it is, the talent.
It's interesting how we see ourselves, especially as women who are much more self-conscious of their everyday gymnastics that they go through, the clothes they wear, the makeup, the breast enlargements or breast reductions. It used to be a whole fad of breast reductions.
That I wished for when I was 11.
Really?
Oh, yes. Very much so.
Was there ever a point where you actually liked your breast?
It's not that it's like the rest of myself, not that I like it or don't like it. It is what it is. And so if my partner, whatever, is my boyfriend, my husband, or whatever it is, finds it beautiful, it's good for him. I'm glad that it is something he likes.
But do you find it beautiful?
I don't find myself beautiful, so I have a hard time with that. There are moments that I see myself differently, and I say, okay, that can work. And this is funny, because of course I'm growing older, so looking at my pictures of 10, 15, 20 years ago, I say, oh wow, I was so cute, I didn't realize it. But now sometimes I say, well, I am a beautiful woman, you know what? Fuck you, I'm a beautiful woman.
What makes a beautiful woman a beautiful woman?
I don't know. I know what makes me beautiful, and it's me. because in that moment something goes into my mind that pleases me somehow, and I see myself differently. But sometimes I see myself so ugly, I play with my ugliness, and so I do funny faces, I squeeze my face, I make my hair crazy, and I do all I can to see myself as ugly as possible. And then I usually drink a glass of wine afterwards.
I mean, as kids we used to do that in the mirror.
Yeah, I do that on a mirror, of course.
You're still doing it?
Oh, yes. Are you kidding? Of course I do. Of course I do.
And
it's liberating somehow.
Yeah, I guess there's so much pressure on women.
Oh, yes.
To be what?
To be Barbies. Or to be, I don't know.
The doll.
I don't know. It's not really about that. It depends on how you want to be. Okay, of course, if you want to be a beautiful doll, you care about that, and you have to take care of that. So you go, you work out every day, and you put makeup, and you go to the hairstylist every week, or you choose the perfect clothes that makes you look cuter, whatever is cute for you. And, you know, the torture of the heels and all those things. If you want that, it's okay with me, you can do it. But what it, I think is silly, and I talk for myself as well, is like trying to be cute or beautiful or sexy or whatever. For what? For what? Why do you want to be beautiful? Why do you want to be sexy? Why do you want to be cute? What is really into that? Are you accepted from the rest of the world? And then when you grow old, what happens? The beauty is gonna go. Doesn't last long.
That's for sure.
Or it lasts forever. It depends on your own mirror.
So I had this woman who was my mother's neighbor. And one time I was visiting her. She moved away. And I went for dinner or lunch at her place, and we had a nice talk. And as I'm leaving, she says, "How come you didn't say anything about my hair, that I'm wearing a wig?" I said, She said, "You know why I'm wearing a wig? Because my hair died before I did." She was 98.
Oh my goodness, that's awesome.
I had her in a play too, a theater piece.
Aww.
That I did. And she had always wanted to be on stage when she was 90.
Oh, that's great.
And she was just brilliant. But identity, I think as we think about people who might listen to this as well, mm-hmm. I mean, what would you say to that 11-year-old, 12-year-old, 15-year-old young girl who was you?
I would say, take it easy. Take it easy. You have a gorgeous body. Take care of it. And not in the sense of keeping it beautiful, but keep it healthy. And enjoy it. Enjoy it.
So your relationship to your body then, and then when you were in your 20s?
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of people look at their bodies almost as if it's a commodity.
Well, because it is somehow. It helps you to go through this life.
I just wonder about how, you know, so many people feel like they're like a product, a commodity on a shelf waiting for somebody.
Oh, in that sense. Okay. Yes, I had this funny conversation with too youngster. And I haven't thought about it, but you know, it came out the thing about the marriage. And I said, I haven't ever been married, but I've been asked 3 times in my life. And just, you know, to make a banter, but it is true. And so this guy in his early 20s, he looks at me, and why did you say no? Aren't you afraid that you're not gonna get married anymore? And I said, so what? If I don't get married anymore, ever in my life, what does that make to me? That I like, go to hell? Something like that. And he thought that I was extremely courageous to refuse these proposals because I couldn't have gotten married anymore or whatever. And that was the worst nightmare for any woman. And he was really convinced about that.
Yeah, marriage is the goal of for many centuries. It was the freedom from...
That's true.
From slavery, you thought, well, but then you got into another slave trade.
Yeah, we say from... I can't translate it. We don't say anything, don't worry.
No, say it in Italian.
Dalla padella alla brace.
You go from the pot, from the frying pan to the pot.
Oh, okay. Oh, you say to cooking pans anyway. No,
right.
We say from the pot to the fire, basically. How can't I remember the same? There are some words that I just don't remember. I don't use them very often in conversation, I believe, in English at least. But yeah, that's what we say. I mean, you see, but it wasn't only the freedom. I mean, like you said that you were worshipped as a boy just because you were a boy.
Yeah,
in your family. So that has always been the common feeling toward women. So the family wanted to get rid of them. So that's why the woman, when a woman gets married in our culture, but in every other, well, not every other culture actually, but in many cultures, it's the woman that has to bring the money in the family, that has to bring the sheets, the nice plates and whatever, and the silverware. It's the woman that has to take care of that because the man already has this big gift that is its penis. So it's done with that. Yeah.
It's very interesting because there was an article recently about, it might have been the New York Times, about women who get married early and don't produce male children.
Oh.
And in some Arabic Muslim cultures, since there is no divorce,
mm-hmm.
It was saying in this article that they burn them alive.
But also that doesn't happen only in Muslim culture. It happens also in Israel. It happens that there is this beautiful movie that I can't recall the title of this this young woman who get married to a guy, and in Israel, very traditional Jewish family,
mm-hmm.
And she can get pregnant. They try, but they love each other. That it's very rare, because you know the weddings and the marriages, the couples are made up by the parents that decide who marries who.
Arranged marriage, yeah.
Arranged marriage is
which
the
is common in many different cultures the world.
Oh yes.
India, Arab cultures, and often very religious cultures as
well. Oh yes, of
course.
But
Africa and
indeed.
I don't know about Latin America, but the Middle East for sure.
Oh yes. But the sad part of this movie is that even if they love each other crazily and they don't want split, but the families, of course, they got into the matter, and they have her rejected.
Wow.
So a woman that cannot produce children is worth nothing.
And a woman who can't produce male children
is, yeah, close to nothing.
So.
But actually, I read in, I don't remember where, but it was a lot of time ago, actually, that is the man that determines the gender, not the woman. So it's not the woman that can produce male or female, or, oh, I mean, if she can get pregnant, that is the man.
I don't know enough about to know enough, but in the sense of identity,
mm-hmm.
we find ourselves looking outside of ourselves to identify who we are. Often a man will look at a woman to teach him about sex,
mm-hmm.
about his own body, and a woman will look at a man as well. They have no concept of it. How does a man know about a woman's body?
Right.
And in many cultures, especially the observant cultures, the Orthodox, they don't even talk to a woman outside of their...
Oh, yes, I know.
Until they're in their 20s or 30s and married with kids.
Right.
They don't go to school together. They keep them separate.
Mm-hmm, I know.
You went to a school, was it an all-girls school?
No, not at all. But there were a larger number of girls than boys in my school. I'm talking about high school. But yeah, there were more women than men, I remember that. More girls than boys.
But society's pressure on women. You know, you look at the fashion magazines, mm-hmm. you look at the whole... just galaxy of insanity that you're supposed to turn and become, you know.
Yeah, like a freak, basically.
I was doing a documentary called Who's Wearing the Emperor's New Clothes,
mm-hmm.
and one of the young women in it was saying, anorexia is a media disease. Before the media, there was no anorexia. Did you ever have to deal with that yourself?
I got close, very close, very, very close. But I also remember the exact moment when I decided not to. But I went very close.
And you knew friends who were?
Fortunately for my friends, none of my friends had such a problem with anorexia. I know, and then maybe in this country it's more common.
Did you said you got close.
I got close, yes. I basically, for a period, I quit eating.
Well, trying to lose weight or trying to look thin and trying to what?
No, just trying to disappear, I guess.
Really?
Yes. And then...
How old were you?
Well, I was pretty old, actually. I was 28.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Yes. But I remember the precise moment that if I had... I was feeling hungry, of course, because I wasn't eating. And I said... I'm feeling hungry, but I don't care, and I'm not gonna eat anything. I'm gonna drink a glass of water, and I'll be fine, as I'm fine now, and I've been yesterday and the day before, so I'll just keep on doing this. And then something happened, and I said, are you completely stupid? Are you so crazy? Don't do that. You need to eat. If you're hungry, you need to eat. And I ate just a very little bit of thing, but I started to eat again.
How long did that last?
maybe a couple of months. Yeah, it hasn't been sudden. I didn't stop eating right away, but less and less and less and less. And I was smoking like a chimney. Yeah, I would smoke like 2 packs a day of cigarettes. Yeah.
Interesting. Did you find yourself, your relationship to your body? That was a pretty intense moment, wasn't it?
Oh yes, of course. It was an intense moment in my life. A lot of changes happened, and
what do you think was going on?
I know what was going on. I don't want to talk about it.
Okay, you don't have to.
Thank you. But it was one of those moments when you feel that well, there is some kind of rejection, and so you feel like you're not worthwhile.
I think that's a common feeling, not good enough.
Not good enough. Yes.
Matter of fact,
I have
a song called Not Good Enough.
Yeah.
With.
Yes, not even not good enough. It's like not good at all. Not good for anything.
But isn't that the culture that women are brought up to believe in many ways?
That they're not worth it? Well, we've just said
unless
that.
Yeah, unless you're beautiful, unless you're attractive.
You produce male children.
Or you produce
children.
Male children, or you're
right.
A good showpiece.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think that a lot of parents have children and they look at them as if they're a showpiece. Oh, look how mm-hmm. smart my child is. Look how
They do
beautiful.
That. And they tell, oh, show this, show that, show how you run, show how you burp, show how you do everything.
Right. Then show how you draw. Oh, mm-hmm. we're going to go down some dance and blank me, you're like a circus animal.
Right. Exactly. I don't know. I like children. I love children. I don't want to have any. I didn't have any. And I had, of course, my moment of biological like wish for a child, but then it went away, and I'm glad of the choices I made.
Having 2 children myself, it's challenging.
I know, but I also know that it's wonderful.
It has its trade-offs.
I'm sure.
It at moments it's an art form you can't compare to.
I know.
But like all things in life, there's, the joy and the pain, they come together sometimes.
Sure. Also the choice of not having children.
Right, the choice. You have choices of pain sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Did you ever feel that way?
Yeah, you choose the pain that looks less painful.
Right. The pain.
But you don't know. You never know because you can't do both. When you make a choice, it's done.
Well, did you make a conscious choice? Not,
yes. Yes. Meaning that I've always been careful of not being pregnant.
It's just interesting. And yet, I'm sure a lot of your friends were getting pregnant left and right, as the ones you grew up with.
Oh, yes. Lots of friends of mine have children, and I love them, and I have a wonderful relationship with friends on Facebook with all
right.
of them, and it's beautiful. I love them, and I'm happy that they're here, of course.
Well, you have your art as your children.
I have myself as my children.
That too. Yeah, I am my own. But now the question often is, as an adult, we keep our children and our inner child helpless so we don't have to deal with them. And our inner child wants to go out and play, and the adult in us says, no, you can't go out and play. You got homework to do, or you've got to got to do this or that. Do you ever go through that in yourself, that kind of?
No. I mean, I guess I never actually, I haven't kept myself from doing what I wanted to do. In the decisions that I make in my life, the ones that I care more about, of course, sometimes I didn't go to that show, and I prefer to stay home for maybe one of those reasons, but no, I enjoyed what I wanted to enjoy, and I still do it. And if I'm not jumping and screaming in the street, it's because I don't care for doing that.
Have you ever tried that?
Yes, I guess when I was younger, I had the wish for that, and I would do it. But now I don't.
Going back to women and the challenges of being a woman, what do you think the biggest challenge of a woman is?
I don't know if there is a common challenge for all women. And I don't know if being a woman, it's a status that is the same for everybody, because being a woman in the USA is different than being a woman in Afghanistan or in Russia or in China. So I don't know, maybe we should ask to different cultures what is the biggest challenge for their own culture. Because in instance, like where the wedding, the marriages are arranged, a man doesn't feel like that he has to be nice to a woman, because he doesn't care, he doesn't need to. He already has his wife ready since he was born, so what should he bother? And so a woman is more or less the same, of course. Well, women condition is much different, because usually especially very strongly religious cultures tend to be much more male centered, and so whatever is not pleasing the man world is not good for a woman.
Why do you think there's so much physical and sexual abuse by men and women? Because they're, you know, sexual abuse is not only one-sided.
It's not, of course, but a man can hurt a woman much worse than a woman can hurt a man when it comes to sex. And I don't know if it's true that it's much more nowadays. Maybe no, we know more about it, and we are informed about it more, thanks goodness. But I don't know, I should be a man to answer this question. I never had the wish of being harsh with somebody or provoking pain to feel turned on or excited or...
Well, there are different types of abuse. You know, there's emotional abuse, there's physical abuse. I just wonder what... So a friend of mine did a film. Mm-hmm. Called In Search of Angela Shelton. Mm-hmm. And she went around the country looking for people who had the same name she had. And she found 100 people, and she found that, or more, but 70% of all the people named Angela Shelton had been sexually abused, including her.
Oh my goodness.
And I remember the first time I met her.
That's really crazy.
She said, Yeah, I did this film, and when I tell people I've been sexually abused, like, it's really hard to get a boyfriend. Now she's married.
But I understand, I mean, being the boyfriend of somebody that went through that.
Yeah, there's a lot of sexual abuse we're finding out more and more on. Mm-hmm. In all sorts of places, that for both men and women. I think we've always felt that it was just women.
Mm-hmm.
I only mention that in the concept of identity, because I think a lot of women
right.
might be identified as victims, justifiably so, and also society hides it and also has its own relationship to it.
Oh, yes.
But I think that's part of identity, is that women especially are seen as victims and able to be victimized.
Mm.
Does that...
It doesn't make sense to me. Because, I mean, what does it mean being able of being victimized? Everybody is able to be victimized or to be a murderer or...
Yeah. No, I just think the concept of women throughout history has been kind of replaceable.
That's not always true, though.
Yeah, you're right.
That's not always true. Even in the Western culture, things, Queen Elizabeth.
The what?
Queen Elizabeth.
Right.
She has a male, and, you know, she's been queen for a long, long time. Even with a male son, with a male child.
Well, the Brits have their own.
I know, but it's
weird
here in this culture, and.
So what about? You know, we were founded by Puritans
mm-hmm.
in the United States. So we're still very much influenced by that.
Mm-hmm.
Puritanical, asexual, conceptual. Now you come from Italy.
Yes, I do.
I mean, you come to this country, and what do you see?
I actually see that women are much more sexualized here than in Italy. And of course, now that in Italy, I'm sure you heard the name of Berlusconi, and
right,
that finally seems to go to jail. And at least he can't do politics any longer. So I don't care if he goes to jail, just keep your hands off my country. But I was shocked, really shocked, and this is the right word to use. About how women here goes dressed. Like, really, Saturday night during the weekends, you see these girls dressed up like. You only see prostitutes in Italy dressed up that way. Nobody dresses up like that. Nobody.
No way.
And so when I saw these girls here, I thought, oh, I mean, maybe on Saturday night, only prostitutes go around. But no offense. No, neither to our prostitutes. I mean,
right,
it's
right,
a very hard job. I wouldn't do it ever. And, but yes, that was really, really funny for me. Like, what is this? I mean, aren't they Puritans? And where are those people? Well, maybe in Italy, I don't know what's different, but it feels that. And I know that many Italians would say, no, you're totally wrong. But from my own experience, it seems that sex is much more natural. It's not a big deal. While here seems to be a big deal. Like whether you have to do it a lot because otherwise you're not cool, or you have to do it just right, otherwise it sounds bad, or you have to score a certain number, or you don't have to. That is pretty true everywhere, but I think that, yeah, I think that in Italy it's more natural. It's not such a big deal.
You mean sex is just part of life? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, it just happens. Like, you know, you're hungry and you go to the bathroom and you need to breathe, and it's part of human being, the human condition. It seems that here is like more, is shown off much more.
Well, it's part of that showpiece mentality of the macho concept. But also women.
Yes, that's why I think they're much more sexualized in this country. And the fact that, you know, you can't say how old you are because there's no discrimination on age. Well, I want to know the people that I'm working with, you know, if we can have the same roots and we can talk about the same things, or I have to avoid, or it's what is, I mean, it's numbers. What is important with that? It's not.
Well, I think that's part of the concept of identity, is that people identify with themselves as objects.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well-preserved objects.
We objectify ourselves to the point that we're spectators in our own lives.
Yes, absolutely right.
Now,
I have to say, I don't have a television, so I don't see all the commercials and things that most people, I'm sure, see here. So maybe I have a distorted idea of what's going on. And all the people that I know and that I want to deal with, that basically they're all artists. And so they have a different kind of mentality, or anyway, I find the minds being more open and not making big deals about anything.
I don't have a TV either. I tried throwing mine out the 20th floor here from my ivory tower to see if my television would bounce.
Did it?
No.
Okay.
It didn't bounce, which was good.
It didn't come back to you.
It didn't come back to haunt.
Looking for revenge.
Right, right. Well, it's just a metaphor I like to use. I didn't throw the TV out because, oh, that's too many unintended consequences. But talking about sex in that sense of our relationship to sex. Mm-hmm. Now, I've always found that, since we're talking about identity, or having lived in Europe and had my fair share of dalliances and experiences and marriages, that a lot of people look at sex as if it's aerobics, if it's gymnastics.
In Europe.
No, in the United States.
In
more.
The United States.
Whereas my experience in Europe was more, it's just part of life, it was more comfortable. And,
yes, I think
it wasn't,
so.
I mean, I've had women ask me to go to bed with them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I've been invited to bed, and I've even slept with women and not had sex with them. And they asked me in the morning, why didn't I do anything?
Mm-hmm.
And I looked at them and I said, because that was too predictable. You know, I wasn't going to fall for that whole game of...
Right. Yeah, you didn't make the movie before it happened.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't that I wasn't attracted to the woman.
I'm sure.
I was, but I just didn't want to be too predictable.
Well, that's
better
a concept that you wanted. I mean, how old were you?
I was old enough to know better. I was probably can't remember, maybe 40?
Hmm.
I can't remember. I can't even remember how old I am now. But the interesting thing was, I've always felt that the real intimacy and our fear of intimacy is our fear of being uncomfortable with ourselves. And that the more comfortable you are physically with yourself, the more comfortable the sex will be, in the sense of it will be a discovery, like children maybe.
Mm-hmm. And so you think that in the USA Americans are too serious to have fun sex?
Well, you know, they look at people as if what can you do for me?
Oh, I see.
A booty call or a toy.
Oh, yes. I just learned what that means. Booty call. Because I saw an ad on a subway.
Oh, really?
Yes. I didn't know what a booty call was. I mean, I know what it is, but I didn't know that it had a name.
Right. Now, I'm pretty ignorant of a lot of things, because I like to be. I don't want to know about all these things.
But I can choose what to do with my knowledge, right?
Right. But in that sense of comfortableness in one's body, so you can actually allow yourself to experience something rather than always being on stage.
Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly.
I remember having a relationship with a dancer.
Mm-hmm.
And having sex with her was like being on stage.
Oh no, that's so sad.
In another instance, I remember having sex with this one woman, and it was like having sex with a doll. She didn't even move. She wasn't even there.
Oh my goodness, that's creepy. I would get scared.
And I think that's common for people in many cultures who feel that, you know, there's no joy in it.
Yes. It's not even... I don't even want to go about joy or happiness, but fun.
Yeah, I mean,
Simple fun.
It's a dance.
Fun. It's beautiful. It's great. It's helpful. It's fun.
My ex-wife, after we would have sex, she would say thank you. How lovely, you know. Mm-hmm. And why she said thank you was because she appreciated not only the act, but she appreciated that I wanted her,
mm-hmm.
that I was attracted to her, that I felt
connected
to her.
This, I feel, is part of a certain culture as well, like the woman being reluctant, you know, and making herself more desirable by, you know, denying and... Because what you also see on the movies or what you hear, it's like, oh, my husband is always around me, I can't take it any longer. Oh, y'all only want to have sex with me. Oh, it's only about that. And you hear this kind of conversations a lot on TV shows, on movies, or on life. But I guess it is part of a culture. But what if your husband stopped wanting you? Would you feel better? Maybe they would. Maybe, I don't know. Maybe there are people that don't care much about sex. Like, they don't care much about food, or they don't care much about music. I'm not kidding. There are people who hate animals. There are all kind of people in the planet, and they're all welcome, of course. But it seems like that has to be the relationship between a man and a woman. The woman makes herself, you know, beautiful, and goes to the gym, and spend money on expensive and beautiful clothes and heels and wigs. Oh, my neighborhood, a lot of wigs, a lot of fake eyelashes, and a big show. And then you wanna run away from the hunter, and it's like this thing, it's okay if it happens, if that makes you happy, it's okay. But why do you need to do that all the time, continuously? What do you really want?
Well, it's interesting. I remember when I was a kid, maybe in early 20s, mid-20s, we used to get our eggs from a local chicken guy. And we'd go there, and you'd have the hens would be running around loose, and the roosters. And one day, I go there and I'm sitting there, standing next to him, and we're watching. And he said, "You ever notice how the hen runs fast enough just to get caught?"
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. Not faster.
Not faster, but just fast enough to get caught.
I don't know.
So maybe that's what all that accessories, you know, all the dressed up and the eye makeup and the wigs and the fat, is to just to run fast enough to get caught.
But that is not true, because the man is the only animal, the human being is the only animal where the women try to be cuter than the man. In all the animal world, the man has to show up how beautiful and powerful they are.
Well, they have to show
peacocks. The peacocks, but all the animals, in all the species, the male animal is much more beautiful than the female animal. The lions with all this awesome hair, and even all the birds, like take a hen, take a rooster. I mean, there's no comparison. The rooster is beautiful with all this big red thing and the, you know, the feathers, and even the hen is like this fat chick, basically. That's it. And so it's not, I don't think it's true that, you know, we are copying that, actually. We are doing, and no, we're doing the opposite. We're doing the opposite. It's like the woman has to show her feathers.
The women, I've always told, you know, women that men are big babies, and the women know this.
Oh, yes.
Not only that, but it's the woman who makes the choice, often. A man might pursue a woman, but in his own mind.
Well, it depends. I don't know. I'm not sure about this. I don't think this.
But I think a lot of women are more in control of the situation than men are.
Well, of course, but it's not about being man or woman, I think, at that point.
We're hardwired to, in our genes, we're hardwired. Like, for example, so go back to the 11-year-old you, and you're this little playing with dolls, and these guys see the breast on you.
Mm-hmm.
And they think, oh, I could have that.
Mm-hmm.
I could lust after that.
Mm-hmm.
What is it in the identity of a male that is programmed to look at a woman, and all of a sudden the whole DNA from billions of years sprouts up?
We're still a young, as a species, we are still pretty young compared to other species. We still have to go through phases and, you know, get better.
So I'll tell you my sex lesson to my son and my daughter, who were about... I think that my son was like 10 or 12 and my daughter was 4 years younger. So the lesson both my son and my daughter, we were on it. I remember where we were on a train in Brooklyn.
Mm-hmm.
And I said to them, I said, "I'm going to give you your sex lesson. The only one you're going to get from me. Don't worry. I'm just going to tell you this." And I said to him, "A stiff penis has no conscience."
That's absolutely right.
And my daughter said, "You know, I never heard that one." She was the younger one. And I thought, really, what more do you have to give them in the sense of...
Right.
But they already know everything.
Oh, yes.
I mean, you know, look at you. You're 11 years old, you were showing off to your friends. You didn't know what it meant.
No.
But you knew that it was a rites of passage.
Indeed.
And as you got older and you had your own experiences of being a woman, that I always think is an interesting experience for women and men, the first time.
The first time, yes, of course.
I mean, I remember my first time was with a French woman, and I didn't know what I was doing, so I put on two condoms. Why did I pronounce him? I have no...
Just to make sure.
I had no idea what he, you know, what did I know about condoms? I just had them.
Okay. They give me three. I should use the three of them.
Right,
all
right.
At once, though.
And, I mean, sex in terms of identity, it's such a strong component of our lives, and mm-hmm. and for most of our life it's uncomfortable. I mean, imagine having sex with a stranger, mm-hmm. somebody you don't know, that you have this intimacy, and our biggest fear is intimacy, that someone's going to discover that we're human.
Yeah, but sometimes sex and intimacy are very far away.
Right. And often it's just kind of, friends of mine, I said, it's easier to masturbate than to go through all that gymnastics.
That's true.
I mean, you know, relationships take a lot of maintenance.
Some of them do. Some others are easier.
I remember I'm walking in California with two rednecks. Mm-hmm. One guy had a trucking company and the other guy had a tow truck company. I'm in the middle of them. And the guy who had the trucking company, he got married because to stop women from crawling in his window at night. The guy who had the tow truck, he got married to get laid. And I'm in the middle of these two guys. And I just thought, wow, what a wonderful bridge of...
Yes.
And who knows why I got married. I'm still scratching my head on that one.
And not only once, right?
Yeah, twice. I almost did it a couple of times, another time. I think... And what is marriage to our society? And many societies, it is the goal.
Yes. It's like... It's like an identity
right.
card, or something that shows you that you are doing it right, doing the right things, you're getting married. But personally, I think that if marriage was a serious thing, divorce wouldn't exist. So what is all this big deal for a thing that you can get rid of very easily?
On the other side, marriage needs to be reinvented, I believe. So that it adapts. Who says that when you're 20 some odd years old that you're not going to grow apart? And that, you know, maybe when you're 40 or 50, you have different things. And a lot of divorces happen when a woman is around. They've done some studies mm-hmm. when she's 32 or 33, but she sees the rest of her life as a prisoner. Mm-hmm. So I got to get out of this for women. It's interesting, our relationship to divorce and separation and marriage. I don't think it's very healthy. And often when the parents fight, they become a burden to their children on top mm-hmm, of that.
Indeed.
So I remember my mother was talking with my daughter, who had gotten married. And she said, I don't have to look beautiful anymore, I'm married.
Ha.
And my mother said, no, you always have to look beautiful for yourself.
Mm-hmm. Of course.
And I thought, wow, that's really revealing mm-hmm. as to the goal.
My sex lesson, I had it when I already had a lot of sex in my life. But this guy, I was part of a choir. And we would dress and undress together. You know, not really get naked, but of course you took your dress off and you put your uniform on. And there was this guy. He passed away last year. That's so funny if I think about it. Passed away so young with a cancer and...
Ouch.
Yes. Anyways, was... very fun guy. He wasn't very beautiful on his face, but he had a body that looked like a sculpture. Incredibly beautiful body. Really, like... But I wouldn't feel attracted to that kind of body anyway. But I couldn't not see how beautiful it was. And so once I complimented him, and said, he was a gondolier.
Oh, he's a gondolier mm-hmm. in Venice.
Yes, of course. The gondolas are in Venice.
Right, which is where you grew up.
Yes. And I told him, wow, I said, congratulations, you have such a beautiful body. I mean, you look like a sculptor. And he said, of course I have to be beautiful for my girlfriend or my wife. I don't remember if they were already married at that time. Because, you know, women don't need to be beautiful. We still are gonna run around women. But a man has to be beautiful because otherwise they will change partner.
Right.
Anyways, oh shit, I got it wrong then so far. I thought that women should have... No, women are always fine. He said, women are always fine, he said. No matter how you are, we always are gonna come around you.
Well, it's interesting because on that other side, the locker room conversations of men is you turn women upside down and they all look the same.
You see? So it's true. It's true. And so, I mean, I don't know who made up all this thing that women has to be beautiful, because men don't really care how they look.
No, you know, women put on all this lips. I once sent my daughter, when she was 14, I sent her money.
Mm-hmm.
I said, here, go buy some war paint.
Mm.
You know, women put on war paint.
Right.
To go out to battle with other women and with men.
Right. Yeah, but sometimes, I don't know what's about. I mean, you are a man. Do you like to see yourself pretty? I mean, you also choose your clothes, and you decide to have your hair, and you grow a beard, and...
We all have a sense of presence,
mm-hmm.
and we inhabit our bodies, and sometimes I look in the mirror and I say, oh, who's that schlub? And sometimes I look, you know, I remember with my second wife, we used to get dressed up and outdo each other, you know,
mm-hmm.
just kind of play with each other.
Mm-hmm.
And she was beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
To me, but she was to some other people. But what is it that attracts us to other people? What is it that...
That's a simple question to answer.
I mean, what is it that attracts you to men?
I have no idea. The fact that there are men, first of all, otherwise, because I'm not gay, and so I like, as a woman, I like men, and so that is the first factor. It is. I mean, can go around that how much you want, but it is the first factor. And I don't know. I mean, the thing that there are things that I really need in a person, whatever is my partner or is a friend or even a colleague, you know, but I need, it sounds like a magazine, but yes, I'm really attracted to intelligence. And I am really attracted to sensitivity. And I'm really attracted to beauty. I like beautiful men. I think I have had boyfriends that were models. They weren't models on their life, but they modeled. They've been asked to model sometimes. But yeah, I have to say all my boyfriends were pretty beautiful men. That's for sure, but I don't think I had once, but he wasn't my boyfriend. I dated this guy, but then he was too stupid. I couldn't just do it, you know? And everything is stupid when somebody doesn't use its brain and everything.
Well, you can't talk to him.
But everything becomes stupid, even the gestures are stupid because they're not driven by intelligence. But I don't know what attracts me there. And I have had tall boyfriend, short boyfriend, large boyfriend, skinny boyfriends. I don't know what actually attracts me.
Do you find yourself a certain kind of a magnetism to certain types of men?
I did more when I was younger. One thing that I One thing that I noticed, and it then the this pattern stopped at a certain point, but all the guy that I was dating or boyfriends or whatever, they all were either orphans of father, or their parents were divorced and they were living with the mother. That was a pattern that I had for a long time in my life. And I don't know, maybe growing up in a female family, I found that these guys also grew up in a female family without their father, and so maybe that was a bond about that. There was something about that, I'm sure. Or maybe because without a father, a man, a person has to grow faster.
Maybe they're...
Or with more responsibilities, being more mature.
Also, maybe they don't have that exposure to men, so they're more feminine, more softer, maybe?
No, not at all. Actually, I found almost the opposite being true.
Oh, good.
But, yes. Yeah, that's funny.
Yeah, I often think that women in the 60s wanted men to be more sensitive and less macho.
Mm-hmm.
And now what you have is you have men who are more like women than women are. And you have a lot of macho women in some ways. You notice that?
I don't know, because I don't really... I don't think that this macho concept is something that actually exists. I think it's just a made-up thing to sell products to make you look the way a real man should look like, or to make some kind of choices. But I think it's totally made up concept. So I don't see it as, I mean, I was born at the end of the 60s, so I didn't see what was before. I can see that everybody was more rude. That I could see. But not only the men, the women too, and of course, especially, it was so hard in Europe after the Second World War, and I saw a lot of movies, and I have my grandparents, beside one, they all were alive, so I heard a lot about war and war stories and their fear and what they actually experienced. And so there wasn't anything like being macho or being not macho. I mean, you have just to survive and then to like roll up your sleeves and work. And that was for everybody.
Now, What's it like to be a woman?
What's like not to be a woman?
Identity.